It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the section. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, night coast and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like him. Never make me think of one. Just make me angry. Never make me go underdog. And never talk about who's gonna stop me. Well, ain't nobody gonna stop me. Not a heavyweight in the world fast enough to stop me.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Can y'all believe it? 2019 is here. Happy New Year to all of yous. Today is late. It's actually late Wednesday, January 2nd, 2019, y'all. It's the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast coming through from the studios of sorts, actually. not really studios, in case y'all get the joke, right? It's not that funny. It's my house. But yeah, I'm here. Jay Hicks back with the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. Coming to talk to y'all a little bit about some football stuff and maybe a little bit of hip-hop, but want to get back at y'all. It's been a minute since we had talked to you guys. It's just me, your boy, flying solo this evening. Nobody's in the co-pilot chair, but it's all good. I'm down here, man. I got my water. I got my... You ever get somebody, like a loved one, a Christmas gift that you were excited to give them, and you really did get it for them? You really did, but you also kind of knew that you would benefit from it? And secretly, you were like a little excited to check it out or be on a benefit, the receiving end of that gift, you know? Yeah, I bought my wife, amongst other things, I bought her a weighted blanket for Christmas, y'all. Weighted blanket. So I'm down here. I'm under the weighted blanket. Y'all could probably hear it shuffling around in the background. That's what that is. Yeah, it's definitely a weighted blanket. That's exactly what it is. And but I haven't like slept under it for real. But it seems pretty cool. I think it does what it's advertised to do. But I bought it for the wife, and she seems to like it so far. So, yeah, man, hope you guys had a happy holiday season. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Hanukkah. Happy New Year. All that good stuff, man. It's been fun. I know I haven't been on in a minute, and some of you maybe have noticed that there's been a little bit of a dearth of activity on some of our social media sites. That's okay. It's temporary. Your boy will be back on the social media tip soon enough, but had to get this podcast out here, especially at this time of year, because it is a very exciting time of year indeed. I will get to that momentarily, but first I have to plug everything, anything and everything as we normally do. Of course, the website is hiphopsportsupport.com. Y'all already know what it is. We've been at this thing for over 6 years now. The podcast has been popping, I think, for over 4 years now. I think maybe even five. I lost count, y'all, to be honest. Let's just put it this way. When I started this podcast, everybody and their mama didn't have a podcast. Okay. Now everybody and their third cousin got a podcast, and it's crazy, right? But we still here. We still keeping it 100. And we're still doing the same stuff that we always did, man. No frills. You know what I'm saying? No fake stuff, no phony stuff. But, you know, we get good interview guests on here from time to time, and we always bring you some great content. We always bring you some educated perspectives on the world of sports and hip-hop music. And so we're going to continue to do that in the 2019. That doesn't sound cool. What are the young kids calling 2019? What's the slang word for that? I don't even know what the slang term is. But yeah, y'all know y'all can hit us up on the website. Leave comments on the website itself, of course. It's always encouraged. Leave comments on iTunes. That's always encouraged. We're on Stitcher Radio also with the podcast. And, of course, you can go check us out on Twitter and Facebook, facebook.com/HHS Report, twitter.com/HHS Report. Like I said, the sites may be, you may be noticing that they're not active at the moment, but they will be momentarily. So go ahead and check us out there when you get the chance. Now, I wanted to get into a few topics this evening because this is a very special time of year, as I mentioned, and it's not just the new year, and it's definitely not college football season. That does not excite me anymore. Anybody that tells you they're excited by college football is freaking lying to you at this point. Okay, we got Alabama and we got Clemson in the national championship, and I couldn't care less, really. I mean, like, I'm gonna watch it because I'm a football fan, I'm a college football fan, but deep down, you know, but it's like I don't care though. And maybe this is me, I'm about to go on a bit of a tangent here, y'all, bear with me. Maybe this is me just being a little bit of a you know, y'all can call it a homer take. I really don't believe it is a homer take. I'm trying my best to be objective about this. You know, I grew up in Ohio. I just came back from Cleveland for the holidays, so shout out to 216 and all my peoples back home in Cleveland. And so obviously, you know, I grew up rooting for Ohio State like a lot of us did. But and I know that it's easy to say, like, well, if Ohio State was in the national championship game every year, would you have a problem with it? No, you'd be loving it. And it's like, okay, but this thing with, you know, I really believe that I would feel this way no matter what team it is. Like, this stuff with Alabama is just getting absurd, man. And it's not that I don't think Alabama's good. They're clearly a great team. So it's not like this is coming from a place of pure jealousy and hatred. Like, I can't admit that they're a great team or a great program or that Saban's a great coach. That's all. That's a farce. You know what I mean? That's all farcical. What it is, though, is this. I just get tired of how this system is rigged for Alabama when Alabama has the best team, or arguably the best team, every single year. Like, we know that they get the best recruits. We know that they're probably no worse than one of the five best teams in any given year now under Saban. Like, we know that. Even in a down year, they're probably the fifth best team, right, at the worst. But what happens is that they find themselves getting the benefit of the doubt every single year, and it just drives me up the wall. I think last year was worse. You know, when you guys remember last year when Alabama basically didn't play anybody the entire season until the last game of the season. Like, they played Florida State, who was probably overranked anyway. They ranked third at the time at the start of the season, but they played them on a neutral field. Alabama has this thing where they play one and no more than one. God forbid they play more than one semi-difficult out-of-conference game. They're only going to play one. It's always going to be on a neutral field. They will never go to anybody else out of conference and play a difficult game. And there's no reason to at this point for them. There's no reason to. They don't have to prove anything at this point to the committee or to anybody else, because they're always going to get the benefit of the doubt. So why even put themselves in jeopardy of losing a game like that? They're going to face their toughest non-conference opponent on a neutral field at the start of the season. And they're just going to do that every year now. That's just going to be their thing, right? And they do that, and then they don't play anybody else that's difficult outside of their conference for the rest of the year. And they throw in like a game against Mercer or the Citadel in December. They always throw one of those games in there late in the season when everybody else is, you know, struggling through their conference schedule. Like, they'll just mix in a game against some directional school or, you know, it'll be like Cuyahoga Community College going up against Alabama on November 15th. Like, it just doesn't make any sense how they continue to do that. But it's just a scheduling thing. But the point is that they will then go through their schedule, and everybody in the SEC, there are good teams in the SEC, but the SEC generally still receives credit as a whole for the work that's largely being done only by Alabama. Right? So, like, you know, they had that run where all those other teams were winning championships and stuff. Like, they had Florida, they had LSU, they had Auburn. But even then, that's only like three other teams that won a championship. That's more than what most other conferences can say in this recent time. But yet, and still, there's still, like, you know, how many other teams in the SEC? Like, there's still like 12 other teams in the SEC, but they all benefit from the work that those teams at the top did. Then Alabama goes on this run, but everybody else in the SEC still benefits from it because everybody else just then assumes that the SEC is better because they're playing against Alabama and these other schools. So, but even if it hasn't bared itself out on the field, like, they just get that benefit of the doubt. So as a result, it overinflates the ranking of every SEC team. And so then Alabama plays a team like Texas A&M, or they play a team like Ole Miss, or they play a team like Kentucky or Tennessee or whomever. And then it's like that team is overrated in that moment because they're in the SEC. You know, so like if it's a 7-5 school in the SEC, that 7-5 school in the SEC is going to be ranked higher than a 7-5 school in any other conference. So if they're on Alabama's schedule, it's like, oh, well, Alabama beat the 13th ranked team in the country. And it's like, well, but yeah, they did. But it's only because they received the SEC bump. You know what I'm saying? And then what happens is, like, last year, Alabama doesn't play anybody. They won that game against Florida State when Francois got hurt at the beginning of the year. They basically went the whole year without playing a seriously difficult game of any kind. Then they play Auburn on the road, a rivalry game against the number 6 team in the country, and they got stomped. Auburn was in complete control of that game from start to finish, and Alabama still got in the tournament, in the playoff. So that told us last year what this was about. Like we knew then from that point that Alabama was pretty much never not going to make the playoff. Like because then after that, they and I didn't have a problem with them getting in from the standpoint of I didn't think that they could win it. Of course they had the talent to win it even last year. But they did nothing to prove that they should be in it. And everything that we heard when they formed this playoff committee was that they were going to base the playoff teams on who on the field deserved to be there. And it had nothing to do with past performance or what they did last year or what they did any other year. And it's all about what the team did on the field. That's what we were told, right? Well, here we have a case where Alabama didn't earn it on the field because they played basically a weak schedule. They went down and played one tough game and they got handled, and they did not make their conference championship game. And we're told that conference championships are important. That's what the committee always says. Alabama didn't even make their conference championship game, and yet they get into the tournament. So at that point, it's like, okay, so this thing is just a farce. Here's that word again, right? This is just a farce at this point. And then this year we roll around, and again, Alabama's having a great year. They're a great team. They're deserving of making the playoff, but they had basically one tough game, and that was the LSU game, and they handled LSU in an impressive fashion. So I give them full credit for that. But they go into the SEC championship game, and we already knew before the game that if they lost, they still would have made the playoff because they had been number one all year. Basically, once they won last year, once they snuck into the playoffs and won it last year, that locked it up for every year going into perpetuity, that unless they lose 3 or more games, Alabama is always going to be in a playoff, just because people act like they can't factor in previous years into their decision making, but they always do. And so we know, and we've seen Ohio State get burned by it, because when they got killed by Clemson a few years ago in the playoff, they haven't been back since. And I don't think that's an accident. But here's Bama. They sneak in. They win the whole thing. And so now it's like, okay, they're just going to be in regardless. So we know that if Bama had lost to Georgia, Georgia would have been in. But Bama would have been in too. They still would have put Alabama in there, and they would have bumped out Oklahoma, even though Oklahoma was a one-loss champion of their conference. And Ohio State was a one-loss champion of their conference. So when I say all that to say, like, the whole thing is just rigged for Alabama, and like, not rigged like they're paying people, like, you know, they're cutting checks to the committee that don't nobody know about or under the table. They're, you know, sending them on trips to Tahiti and nothing like that. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that the way the system is set up now, it does not incentivize Alabama to put anybody difficult on their schedule, because they're always going to get the benefit of the doubt. They've earned it to a large degree, but at the same time, they're not supposed to have the benefit of the doubt, quote unquote, because the benefit of the doubt is not supposed to exist in this playoff format. It's supposed to be on this year, what was done on the field. So basically, the committee, regardless of what happens, the committee's always going to think they're one of the best teams. So there's no incentive for them to play anybody difficult on their schedule. So they're just going to set up a cakewalk schedule every year, and they're just going to get chauffeured into the playoff. then that, and that's just pathetic, man. Like why are we watching this crap? And Clemson is in a similar situation in that their conference is pretty garbage, and they're just going to run roughshod over the ACC every single year. So as long as they don't lose more than one game, they're going to be in the playoff every year now because they've earned that benefit of the doubt. So what happens when two other teams earn that benefit of the doubt? What happens when Oklahoma just does it every year? You know, or maybe it's Ohio State. I don't know. But, you know, we've seen Ohio State getting they got left at the altar the last couple of years. I mean, Oklahoma doesn't always make it, but it seems like there's a pattern with Clemson and Alabama. And here we are again next Monday seeing these same two teams. And it's just like, I don't care, man. Like, they can't make me care about this. It's not the same like the Warriors and Cavs were in the NBA, or, you know, a great rivalry in some other sport where the same two teams are meeting, like Ali and Frazier. Like, it ain't the same. It's not like the Patriots either in the NFL. You know why it's not like the Patriots? When people want to compare Alabama to the New England Patriots, and I understand that comparison, it's not like that either, and I'll tell you why. The Patriots still have to go out and earn their spot in the playoffs every year. They have to play 16 games. They're going to have to win at least 11 of them, probably at least 10 of them, maybe more, and they typically do. They typically win 12 games. And then people want to complain. I've seen like a lot of talking heads lately talk about the Pats and say, well, you know, they only get to the Super Bowl whenever they have a first round bye, as if that's some sort of criticism because they get a bye every year. Like, that's their fault. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they earn that first round bye. So they get the bye every year. They earn that bye every year, though. And then they have to win two games every year to get to the Super Bowl. And that's just what it is. But they earn that spot. They earn that bye every year. Alabama doesn't have to do that. Alabama can basically roll out of bed and play the Citadel in November, you know what I mean, and play some SEC schools. Maybe they play one tough in-conference road game. They play one marginally difficult non-conference game on a neutral field. They win both of those two games, and they're automatically in the SEC championship. And even if they don't make the SEC championship, they still make the playoff, just like last year. So the whole thing is trash to me. Anyway, that's not why I'm excited about this time of year. I'm excited because I've learned, y'all, I've learned that I really love the NFL playoffs, and I've always loved the NFL playoffs, but like these wild card matchups and the divisional round, I just live for this stuff, y'all. And the proof is in the freaking pudding, y'all, because your boy Jay Hicks, since he started Hip Hop Sports Report, I've been picking playoff games every year. Wild card round, y'all. I'm pulling up my record right now. I have my record as far as wild card game. I was 3-1 picking wild card round games last year. I'm 18-6 all time in the wild card round. That's 75% clip, y'all. Why go to Vegas? Just come here. So I'm looking at these matchups, and all of them are close. All of them are basically, well, three of the four are less than a field goal as far as what the line is on them. And this should all be really compelling, interesting games. And so rather than writing a column like I normally do, I just wrote the hip hop column. And I'll probably touch on that real quick, but I'm going to go ahead and jump into these NFL playoffs, y'all. Before I do that, I did want to talk about a couple other teams. Cleveland Browns. I just went back to Cleveland, so I got to talk about the Browns. Everybody always wants my opinion on the Browns. They want my opinion on Baker Mayfield. People want to try to come at me and say I'm wrong about Baker Mayfield. I'm not prepared to say that. Anybody who's listened to me knows that I was not on board with the Browns selecting Baker Mayfield number one overall in the draft. And it's not that I ever thought that he was going to be a terrible NFL quarterback. But what I said was on our Mark draft, shout out to Mark Hicks, what I said on the Mark draft podcast last April was just that, to me, Baker was just an amalgam of everything that you really don't want in an NFL quarterback. He was cocky. He ran his mouth a lot. He ran around a lot. I was unsure of his arm strength. He played down south, and he was coming to an up north team. He's undersized. He played in a conference that didn't play any defense. He never took snaps under center. You know, like all these things, you know, he's throwing the guys that are wide open all the time. And I just wasn't convinced that he was going to be able to fit the ball in NFL windows necessarily. He got in trouble off the field. Like all these things were just red flag after red flag after red flag that just said to me, you know what? I'm good. I'm cool. I'm cool on Baker Mayfield. But not that he was going to be terrible. And what's happened is he's come in and he's played great for the most part. But even still, what we found is that his performance is still being overrated by people, y'all. And I'm sorry to be the one to tell you that. I'm sorry to be the one to be the bearer of bad news, because it sounds like I'm just peeing on the parade of Cleveland. And there's nothing more that I, you know, I would never want to do that to my hometown. You know, that's my hometown city and team. I've been rooting for the Browns since as far back as I can remember. And I never would want to intentionally do that. But I do have an obligation to come out here and spit the truth behind this here microphone. This Samson mic that I spent a pretty penny on. Yeah, I'm going to come back here and tell the truth to y'all. Baker Mayfield has exceeded my expectations some this year. But what I really think it is Brown's quarterback play has been so trash for so many years that just the fact that we're seeing a guy when orange and brown look competent, it's got people just, you know, going over the moon for Baker Mayfield. And so, you know, again, he's been good for the most part. But, well, you know what? Let me just take that back. He's been decent at times, but there's been some times where he's not been decent. But what happens is that he doesn't seem to get criticized for the times that he hasn't been decent. And when the times that he has been decent, his performance is not only overrated, but then he gets credit for stuff that he doesn't even deserve. And so I'll tell you all about that real fast. So if you look at his performance, right? And I'm pulling up the stats here on the phone. Baker Mayfield set the NFL record for touchdown passes for a rookie quarterback. And so that's a great feat. And it's nice. It's a nice record for him to have. And I think that's really cool that he got that record. I never would have thought that he approached that record. So good on him for doing that. The flip side, though, is like, who did he rack up those touchdowns against? We know that 7 of those touchdowns came against the Bengals. And in case y'all were wondering, a couple of weeks back, I threw 3 touchdowns against the Bengals, my damn self. So, I mean, we know that they're, you know, Cincinnati kind of quit. They checked out. Marvin Lewis got fired. Like, that team was on their way out. And in the last month of the season, Baker threw 7 touchdowns on those dudes. That's one thing. Or the last, you know, six weeks of the season, whatever it was. In addition to that, he threw, let's see here, against the Atlanta Falcons. They've always been known to have a juggernaut defense down in Atlanta, right? He threw 3 touchdowns and no picks against them with a 151 passer rating and a 97.1 QBR rating. I mean, everybody can do that against. Who can't do that against the Atlanta Falcons? Again, like, we've seen teams light up the Falcons for years. Like, they've never been known as defensive stalwarts up there or down there in Atlanta. Baker put up 2 touchdowns against the Kansas City Chiefs. Their defense is no good. But where you see the difference, though, is, and he put up touchdowns against quite a few teams, but what you see the difference is the interceptions. And when he plays against good defenses, the picks tend to come. He threw a pick in the first game he played against the Ravens and completed only 58% of his passes. Of course, he threw 2 picks and lost 2 fumbles, including a pick 6 in his first start as a NFL player against the Raiders, and their defense is terrible, actually. But then against the Broncos, they have a pretty decent pass defense. He threw 2 TDs. He threw 1 really bad pick in that game. He threw 3 picks against the Houston Texans in the first half. We know they have a top 10 defense. He threw 3 picks against the Ravens last week, and we know the Ravens have a great defense. So, you know, it's fair to – oh, in the Steelers game, he threw a pick in that game as well. And he was terrible. He threw for 180 yards, 2 touchdowns and a pick. He was garbage against the Steelers. And I think that touchdown may have come in garbage time. So it was kind of like, you know, most of his performances and the wins that came, they all came against bum teams too. Cincinnati, Denver, Carolina, Cincinnati, Atlanta. These are all non-playoff teams. The Jets, when he came in as off the bench, the only playoff team that he beat was the Ravens, and that was in overtime. And he was not particularly special in that game. 25 of 43, 342, 58% completion percentage, 1 TD, 1 pick. Like, again, I'm not saying that he doesn't show promise. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that people are getting a little ahead of themselves with the praise that they're giving him, because all I'm hearing from people in and out of Cleveland is that Baker Mayfield turned around the Cleveland Browns. That's a farce, y'all. I'm just here to tell y'all. It's, again, it's another lie that y'all are being told, man. And again, I'm not saying people are going to, you know, pick apart what I'm saying. Like, I'm not trying to give them any credit at all. What I'm saying is that the Cleveland Browns were going to be good this year regardless of Baker Mayfield. Now, how do I know that? Well, if you look at the first game of the season against the Steelers, who were coming off the playoffs, playoff appearance last year, division champs many years, the Steelers were a presumed Super Bowl pick in the AFC of many. I'm going to get to the Steelers in a minute, by the way. I'm going to roast those fools. But a presumed Super Bowl favorite in the AFC was Pittsburgh. The Browns come out against them, have the lead for the majority of the game. Tyrod Taylor was the starting quarterback. The Browns really should have won that game. They probably win that game in overtime. They probably win that game in overtime if Myles Garrett doesn't shove a guy in the back on that Joe Schobert return. I think Joe Schobert, he either caught a pick or it was a fumble recovery or something in overtime. He's running down the field. He has the Browns set up in field goal range in overtime. Myles Garrett shoves dude in the back, and that bumped the Browns back like 15 yards and or 10 yards or something. And then they got, I think maybe there was a sack on the next play, and they got knocked out of field goal range, and the game ended in a tie. But the Browns probably should have won that game. That was week one. Week two, the Browns go down to New Orleans, and they're beating up on the Saints, y'all. The Saints are the number one team in football. The Saints are a lot of people's Super Bowl favorite because they are playing at home the entire playoffs. And yet it was that team that the Browns went down into their building and had those dudes on the ropes with Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor threw a huge pass late to Antonio Callaway that went for like a 50-yard touchdown. He threw a dime. And that touchdown put the Browns in front. And the Browns would have won that game had their kicker been able to make a kick. But instead, he missed five. And he got fired the next day. And the Browns lost that game. But between those two games, between the Steelers game and the Saints game, the first 2 weeks of the season, we knew that the Cleveland Browns were a much improved team. They were not the same team that won one game 2 years ago. They were not the same team that won zero games last year. This team was ready to make a huge step in improvement this year without Baker Mayfield in the lineup. And we saw it in those two games because they should have won them both. Now, granted, Baker came in and played well, and the Browns ended up winning seven games. I'm not saying they would have won seven games had Tyrod Taylor been the starter the whole year. But what I am saying is they would have won more than zero, and they probably would have won at least four or five, at least. So to sit here and suggest that Baker Mayfield turned around the Browns, I'm not ready to go there, y'all, because the Browns were already ready to be turned around before he even got the keys. And that's just the truth. Now, he did a good job when he got in there, and Browns fans have a reason to be optimistic about what the future may hold. But I'm not about to sit here and tell you that he's the best young quarterback in the league when Patrick Mahomes is throwing out 50 touchdowns out here. I'm not about to tell you that Baker Mayfield should be Offensive Rookie of the Year when Saquon Barkley racked up 2,000 yards on a garbage team. Are you out of your mind? Saquon had like one bad game all year. Baker had several. Saquon didn't have as many wins as Baker did. But that's because he doesn't play quarterback. That's not his fault. He did stuff that running backs never do. He had, 14 touchdowns, 15 touchdowns, I think. He set the rookie record for receptions, 2,000 total yards from scrimmage, led the NFL as a rookie. He played with no offensive line, no quarterback. Odell Beckham missed the last month of the season, and Barkley was killing it from the word go. You think I'm about to sit here and give Baker Mayfield Rookie of the Year over Saquon? You're out of your mind. No. But, you know, people want to give them to the quarterback, and I get it. So, you know, that's all about the Browns, man. I don't know who they're going to pick as their head coach. My guess would be Mike McCarthy is going to strongly be considered. I would also guess that Freddie Kitchens is like a real dark horse, I think. I don't know if they're going to bring back Greg Williams, but I was talking to a friend of the podcast, Mark Hicks, and he and I were in agreement that we would not be shocked if Freddie Kitchens actually wound up being the head coach somehow, just because he has the relationship with Baker and they seem to get along really well. Oh, and about the Pittsburgh Steelers real quick. You know, I would laugh at them right now, but I don't want to wake my kids. Okay. I don't want to wake my kids up, but I would, be doing, I'd be giving you a hearty laugh right now at the Pittsburgh Steelers, just because everything that they're doing right now is stuff that we've seen before. Remember when they blew out the Carolina Panthers and everybody was on their nuts when they beat them up on a Thursday night game? And everybody was like, oh, Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh going to the Super Bowl, Pittsburgh, you know. And on Twitter, I said that this is a classic Steelers game right here, where they get a good team coming into their building, because they always seem to play a lot of primetime big games at home. They get Carolina coming in there. Carolina was still good at that point. And they just ran all, they just ran right through the Panthers. But then we knew that the next week they were going to struggle against the lowly Jags. And what happened? I put it on Twitter. I said, watch them struggle next week against Jacksonville, because they always play down to their competition. This is what the Steelers do, y'all. This is what they do. And what happened? They were down the whole game against Jacksonville. And of course, they pissed it away because they're Jacksonville, but they should have lost that game, Pittsburgh. And then what happened? They go out, they lose a game at Oakland. They throw a stupid pick against the Broncos late and they lose that game. They just start losing left and right down the stretch. The whole team basically disintegrates. Ben's going on the radio calling out everybody. Antonio Brown's throwing footballs at people's heads and all this other kind of crazy shit. Like, this team, this is who they are, man. Like, every year the Steelers, they're like Alabama in the sense that everybody gives them the benefit of the doubt every year, but at least Alabama wins championships. Like, the Steelers, they haven't won a championship in 9 years, I don't think, and they tend to get this benefit every year. People are just can't wait to pick them because they play fantasy football and they see all the stats and they just can't wait to put the Steelers in the Super Bowl. And I'm just like, what makes you think that they're going to be able to get there? What makes you think they're going to get by New England? They can't beat New England. And ironically, the one team that they beat down the stretch this year was New England. But that's because that was their Super Bowl, was beating New England, because everybody knows they can't beat them. So they beat the Pats, and then they immediately crash back to earth. That's because that's just what the Steelers do. So all this stuff that's going down to Pittsburgh is not surprising in the slightest. If you listen to me, any year, I never pick the Steelers to go to the Super Bowl. I always pick them to underperform in the playoffs, because that's what they do, and that's who they are. So it's about time they got the chance to show the true colors. They missed the playoffs like some dopes, and I'm not mad about it. So there's that. But let's get to the teams that actually did make the playoffs this year, y'all. Again, these are my wild card picks for the weekend. The Jay Hicks wild card picks on HHSR. We're going to start with the Colts and the Houston Texans. The Texans are favored by 1.5. Now, before I get into these picks, you know, obviously I do have to acknowledge the picks that I made at the start of the season. Some of them look pretty good. Some of them look really bad. And so I'll put that out there right now. I did have the Steelers making the playoffs, but by default, I didn't know who else in the AFC to plug in there. But I did have the Patriots, Steelers, Texans, Chargers, Jaguars, and Ravens making the playoffs this year. In the AFC and the NFC, I had the Giants, Vikings, Saints, Rams, Eagles, and 49ers. So I got 4 of the 6 in the AFC, missed on the Steelers, missed on the Jags. In the NFC, I got 3 of the 6, missed on the Giants, Vikings, and 49ers, although I don't really count the 49ers because Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt. So I kind of I throw them out. Like, I don't really hold that against myself. But I did have the Vikings winning the Super Bowl. I'm going to go ahead and hold that against myself. Shame on you, Justin, for picking the Minnesota Vikings. I'm not sure how they fell apart. It's really just their defense, y'all. Their defense just really was not. That's the change. Everybody wants to focus on Kirk Cousins. It was really the Minnesota defense wasn't nearly as good as it was last year. And they just weren't on the same level. And sometimes defenses do that. They're not the same team year over year. And Minnesota's D fell off considerably because they were a top 2-3 defense in the league last year. And that changed this year. And that's what the difference was in that, with them. But I did say on a recent podcast with, I think it was the one with I did with Vince Hicks, that I said that I had no issue with going back on my Chargers pick out of the AFC, and because I reserve the right to pick the Patriots whenever I feel like it. Because I've been, anybody who's followed the site knows how I feel about Tom Brady, knows how I feel about the Patriots, and I felt like I've stumped for them enough to the point that I don't need any type of permission from any of you guys in order to double back on my pick and pick the Patriots. Now, I'm going to get to the Patriots in a little bit, but I think that even though this is a down year for them, admittedly, this is a down year for New England, I think they can still get back to the Super Bowl again. And I'm going to tell you who I think they're going to play a little bit later, if they do get there. But we'll start with the Colts and Texans. So Indy just beat up on the Texans a couple of weeks ago. And I think this is going to be a really close game, y'all. I mean, they played twice, obviously, the division rivals. The Colts pretty much had them beat in Indy in week four. They pretty much had Houston beat, and Frank Wright did this thing where he, I guess, deep in his own territory, he went for it on fourth down in overtime, didn't get it. The Texans completed one pass and kicked the field goal when the game was over. But that, so they basically gift-wrapped that game for Houston, but that game was right there for the Colts to win. And then recently, when the Texans were on a 9-game winning streak, the Colts went to Houston and took them behind the tool shed and put it on them, you know what I mean? And so I think that can happen again. Now, I don't think that they're going to necessarily whoop them. I'm not saying that, I'm not predicting a blowout or anything of that nature, but I think that the Colts are going to win this game. I like the fact that Andrew Luck has been playing so great since that 1-5 start that Indy was on. He's been throwing to three different tight ends, and he's beating people with it, and it's the three tight ends plus T.Y. Hilton, but they've also found a running game too. The biggest difference with Indy, though, is there is a couple things, man. Their defense has gotten tremendously better this year, especially since that 1-5 start as well. The defense has completely turned it around. Darius Leonard has been a beast, and people use that term too often, but that's an apt word to describe that kid. He's a beast, and I know this because he was on my fantasy team, y'all, and he crushed it for me en route to winning a championship. Shout out to the fantasy champions of the Ruckus Jungle League. Winning is contagious, bruh. Yeah, it is. We won another title. But yeah, Darius Leonard is great. And the Colts defense has been tremendous. What I really like about Indy is that they went out and fixed their offensive line, man. And now their offensive line is pushing people around. And so we have Houston that has one of the worst offensive lines in football. Deshaun Watson, I believe, has taken more sacks than any other quarterback, going up against the Colts, who have an improved defense and an offensive line that is among the best in football right now. And they're playing lights out, and they're running the ball with Marlon Mack, and they're hitting this guy Hines out the backfield, and Andrew Luck is finding these weapons, and he's turning them into something when they're guys you never heard of before. The Colts seem to be really in sync right now. I just like what they're doing. I don't like that the Texans' O-line is trash. I don't like that the Texans are injured at wide receiver, except for Hopkins. Obviously, Demaryius Thomas is hurt. He's not going to play. T.Y. Hilton is banged up, but he's going to play through it. And also a member of Winning is Contagious, bro. Shout out T.Y. Hilton. He lit up the Texans for 199 yards a few weeks ago. I like the Colts. Houston is fourth in the league in takeaways. So if they can force Andrew Luck into some turnovers, that'll be the difference. We'll see if Luck has the composure to not do anything stupid like he did against Tennessee the other night when he threw that ridiculous interception deep in his own territory. But yeah, I give me the Colts in that one. I don't have a score for you. I'm not doing a score thing. That's just anybody that predicts the score of a game and gets it right, they're just guessing. It's all garbage. Like it's pure luck. There's no skill behind that. But I will give you the outcome though. So give me the Colts to prevail at Houston. Houston seems to always lose their first playoff game. Or if they win it, then they go to play New England and they get crushed. That's just what they do. The Seahawks are going to Dallas to play the Cowboys on Saturday night. Another really close game. I think both of these teams, much like the first matchup, these teams are evenly matched, man. The Colts and the Seahawks are pretty much the same team. They play defense. They run the ball. They don't do anything too spectacular in the passing game, but they're efficient in the passing game. And they don't beat themselves very often, and they're great in the trenches. And that's the kind of team that you want, man. That's the kind of team that you want come playoff time. You find yourself, when you look at these games, you think about the defenses, you think about which defense can you trust, and then, of course, you think of the head coach and the quarterback, and those are probably the three things that you think about most, with the fourth, I guess, being takeaways or who can force turnovers, but that kind of goes hand-in-hand with the defense. I trust Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll more than Dak Prescott and Jason Garrett. Why? Because one of them has Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, and the other one has Dak Prescott and Jason Garrett. You know what I'm saying? So, Jason Garrett, hasn't had the best run of all the coaches that we've seen in the NFL. He's still hanging on there somehow. He's like the new who was the dude from Detroit that Chris Berman used to refer to as Rasputin? I gotta look him up now. Because the guy basically couldn't die. Like I guess Marvin Lewis took that spot till he got fired recently. But you know, this dude was in Detroit for a ton of years, and he would never get fired. Well, what was his name? I'll tell you exactly who he was. He was the coach in the 90s, y'all. It was Wayne Fonts. That's who it was. Coach from 88 to 96. Yeah. He coached 133 games and was sub 500 in all those years. Wayne Fonts, yeah. That guy, I don't know how he stayed that long, but he basically passed that mantra over to Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher passed it to Marvin Lewis. And now the new guy is Jason Garrett. I even though Dallas has the home field advantage, I don't love the Cowboys in this matchup just because it's really got nothing to do with the Cowboys. I just love Russell Wilson, man. I love what he's able to do. I said years ago that he reminded me of a little mobile brown Tom Brady, and that's exactly what he is, man. I mean, like, he's proven that to be the case. He's a great leader. He's great on the intangibles, but he throws a pretty ball when you give him a chance. But he doesn't have to be the reason why his team wins. He doesn't have to throw for 300 yards. He can throw for 300 yards and win a game. And three touchdowns and win a game, but he doesn't have to do that every single week. And he has enough. His ego is small enough that he doesn't need to be the guy to have to do that. And he's got no problem handing it off 30 times to win a game in the playoffs. And Chris Carson has been running the ball like hell. Another member of Winning Is Contagious, bro. Chris Carson. He's probably the MVP the MVP of the final matchup was Aaron Rodgers. Like, who's kidding who? Rodgers gave me 46 points in that matchup, but. Chris Carson helped carry my team to a championship also late in the year. He was great, and he's been running the ball better and better each week, and the more they've been feeding him. That guy runs hard, man. He was a seventh-round pick. That guy runs hard. Obviously, Ezekiel Elliott's the better player, just as when you compare running backs, but you know, I really like what Carson's doing. The Cowboys haven't been the same since Amari Cooper came aboard. Amari has given them a different dimension that they did not have before. Far better than Dez Bryant. It's Amari Cooper, but Cooper gives him a different dimension in the passing game, and he's been explosive. He's gotten some great run after catch plays, and he's been dynamic pretty much since he's gotten there. But he's tapered off a little bit in these last few games. Not that necessarily means he can't step up in this upcoming game, but his production has tapered off a little bit, if we're being honest. Since that 10 catch, 217 yard, 3 touchdown outburst against the Eagles. Amari Cooper, 4 catches for 32 yards against Indy, 4 catches for 20 yards against Tampa Bay, and 5 catches for 31 yards against the Giants. So again, and he lost a fumble in that game against the Giants. So he's not been killing it. He has not been killing it, to say the least, since that Eagles game. He might have emptied his clip in that game. They also got shut down by the Colts, the Cowboys did. The Cowboys, you know, as great as they are, they have this propensity to get pushed around from time to time, even though they were a tough physical team themselves. They got really pushed around by that in that Colts game when they lost 23-0 at Indy. That was within 3 weeks ago. And, you know, I don't know, even though Zeke led the NFL in rushing, I believe, I don't know that that's something that's not a good sign. If you're struggling to beat the Giants last week of the season, you're beating Tampa Bay only by 7 points at home. You got slaughtered by the Colts at Indy 3 weeks ago. These aren't good signs for a playoff team. Now, granted, to be fair, you know, the Seahawks lost the game late in the season to the 49ers. Didn't look sharp against the Cardinals either. But again, it just goes back to who do you trust. I trust Russell Wilson, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm going to go ahead and give the nod in a narrow victory to the Seattle Seahawks there. Chargers at Ravens on Sunday. This is a rematch from what we saw a couple of weeks ago also. Oh, forgot to mention, speaking of rematches, the Seahawks did play the Cowboys earlier this year. And, you know, obviously Amari Cooper wasn't in that game. And on the flip side for Seattle, Earl Thomas was in that game and caught 2 interceptions. Earl Thomas has since gotten hurt. Amari Cooper has since been traded for. But for what it's worth, the Cowboys basically didn't score a touchdown until in the first 52 minutes of that game. They didn't score a touchdown. And that game was in Seattle, too. So this game is going to be a lot different. I guess maybe that's why I forgot about it. You can't really take a ton from that game and apply it to this game. but I still think Seattle wins. LA Chargers at Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens are 2.5-point favorites, in spite of the fact that they're the higher seed. This is a 5 out of 6, I believe, or a 4 out of 6, excuse me. Wait a minute. What the hell? I don't even know what this game is. What is this game? The Chargers are a 5 seed, so they're at the 4-seeded Baltimore Ravens. That's right. But it's confusing, though, because the Chargers won 12 games and the Ravens only won 10. But I guess it has to do with the division championship thing. Baltimore won the division. The Chargers did not. Kansas City won the AFC West. So, therefore, the Chargers are the higher seed, and they're traveling back east to play the Ravens. But, again, the Chargers won 2 more games. And why do they win 2 more games? Probably because they're the better team. And it's not fun to try to predict a West Coast team traveling east to win. And Phillip Rivers had one of his worst games of the season against the Ravens just a couple of weeks ago. Matter of fact, that whole offense looked horrific against the Ravens. That was probably the most impressive defensive performance for the Ravens all year. And this is a damn good defensive team that played a lot of good offenses this year, and the Ravens were rock solid all year. Typically, as you're going to find out in a moment, I really tend to rely heavily on whose defense can I hitch my wagon to this time of year. But one thing I don't like to hitch my wagon to is a rookie quarterback. I did a piece back in 2013, I believe. I think it was early 2013. It may have been the first year that I was picking games, y'all. And I picked it was my first year picking games. And so I did a piece about whether or not a rookie quarterback could win a Super Bowl. And I obviously, the 3 rookie quarterbacks at that time were Robert Griffin, Andrew Luck, and Russell Wilson, all of whom made the playoffs that year. I concluded, no, a rookie quarterback can't win a Super Bowl, I don't believe. At least it hasn't happened yet. Not to say it can never happen, but I'll predict it when I see it. The closest thing we're ever going to see to that probably is, I think, Brady and Roethlisberger and Wilson. They all did it in their second year. But, you're not really going to see too much of that in the first year. Brady did it in his first year as a starter. Like, he didn't start his first year. He walked in the door in his second season as his first year starter and won the whole thing. But it's hard to do, needless to say. And so Lamar Jackson, who it seems like Baltimore won't even let him throw the ball more than 12 yards down the field, is, at least not on a consistent basis, is now everybody's sexy pick to make a Super Bowl run, which is funny because it was just a couple of weeks ago that the Chargers were everybody's sexy pick to make a Super Bowl run. I mean, if you consume like a lot of sports talk and stuff, it's just absurd the way that they talk about these teams, man. And anytime a team goes on a 2-game winning streak, they just want to kiss their ass and put them in the Super Bowl and all this other stuff. Now all of a sudden the Chargers are yesterday's news when everybody said that they were the best team just a couple of weeks ago. They lost 1 game, I believe, late to the Ravens, and now all of a sudden everybody's out on them. If there's any reason to be out on the Chargers, really, it's the fact that they've been banged up. Melvin Gordon's been banged up. Keenan Allen's been banged up. Austin Eckler's been banged up. I don't know if any of them are going to be 100% for this upcoming game, but if they are, I really like the Chargers to win, mainly because I think that they were thrown off by the whole Lamar Jackson thing. They're running these wishbone formations, the Ravens are. They've got 6 dudes in the backfield, and you got to pick which one's going to hand it off to, or Lamar's going to keep it himself. You know, they have these no-name running backs, Kenneth Dixon and Gus Edwards. I only know their name because I play fantasy football. That's it. Like, I don't even play Madden no more, y'all. But, that's the only way that anybody can know these dudes. And yet here they are picking up all these yards on the ground, and Lamar Jackson makes it harder to defend them. Because anytime you have a quarterback who's willing to run and he's running, a RPO-style offense or a read-option-style offense, it's going to make it harder for you to stop the running back because you don't know when he's going to get the ball or not on a given play. Lamar Jackson's been tremendous this year. He's been great at what he does. And I think as time goes on, I think the Ravens will learn to trust him more to throw the ball in certain situations. Only now just doesn't appear to be there yet. Like, we don't appear to be at that situation just yet where they feel comfortable throwing the ball, letting him throw the ball. I think you just got to load up and try to stop the run as best you can if you're the Chargers. But I think that the Chargers are going to be better prepared for it because now they got tape on Lamar Jackson. And it's one thing when you ain't got a tape on a guy. And it's even another thing when you ain't got tape on a guy that's running an offense that's unlike any other offense in football. that's the biggest key to the Ravens' success, is that their offense right now is so unique that people don't know how to prepare for it. But the Chargers can prepare for it better than anybody because they just saw it 2 weeks ago. And so for that reason, primarily, I think that LA is going to travel to Baltimore and win that game. I do. I think they're the better team. I think they've been better all year. I think they're the more well-rounded team. I think Phillip Rivers is a great quarterback who hasn't had his moment in the sun, but he deserves it. And I think that if Melvin Gordon is something like healthy, that this team is going to be much harder to beat. I like the Ravens defense a lot, but I don't. They're not the best defense in football. Don't let those numbers fool you. If you're looking at points allowed per game or yards allowed per game, that would suggest that they're the best defense. They're not the best defense. I'll tell you why in a minute. But yeah, man, I don't like the rookie quarterback thing, and I think the Chargers are a more well-rounded team. And I think they're going to win that game on the road, in spite of the fact that they just lost to them 2 weeks ago. But playing the Ravens and losing to them a couple of weeks ago is the best thing that could have happened to the Chargers in this situation. I really believe that. And Baltimore had an easy schedule down the stretch, too. In fact, the only playoff team that they beat all year was the Chargers. And so, I just like San Diego. Yeah, I called them San Diego, whatever. I saw that coming a mile away. I like the Los Angeles Chargers in this game, y'all, against the Ravens. In spite of the fact that they're 2.5-point underdogs, that means I picked three road teams, y'all. I picked the Colts, I picked the Seahawks, and I picked the Chargers. So that leads us to the Eagles and Bears. Am I going to go for the clean road sweep? No, I'm not. The Eagles have been kind of flying high lately. They kind of backdoored their way into the playoffs. They were underwhelming all year. Carson Wentz gets hurt. Nick Foles comes in, and all of a sudden the team catches fire again. It's crazy. It's hilarious, actually, if you're not an Eagles fan, because now it's like, are they going to trade Carson Wentz for a fourth-round pick? Because that may be what this comes to. They may have to just end up getting rid of him because Nick Foles is going to just take his job. You can't keep Nick Foles down. That's what we're learning, y'all. Seriously, though, I see this Bears and Eagles game. The Bears are 6-point favorites in Chicago. And I said this earlier. Go back and look at our column that we had written, or that was on Hip Hop Sports Report just a few weeks ago. It was written in November, I believe, just kind of our hot 16, just kind of 16 quick hitters about the NFL season at that point. And I said in that piece that the most slept-on team that nobody was talking about was the Chicago Bears. And I still feel that way. I think the Bears are the best team in the NFC, and I think they're going to go to the Super Bowl. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead and rewind it. I'll let you rewind it 10 seconds to let that soak in. I think the Bears are going to go to the Super Bowl. I think they're the best team in the NFC. They haven't gotten nearly enough credit for it all season, but they're damn good. For one thing, they have the best defense in the league. And so I mentioned a minute ago about what the defense was, or why the Ravens defense, was not the best, even though they statistically might suggest that they're the best in terms of points allowed and yards allowed. And it took me like a day to figure it out. And I figured it out, y'all. I cracked that code as to why it is that the Bears are actually the best defense. And it's pretty simple, really. There's three reasons, I think. Number one is Khalil Mack. The Ravens don't have anybody like Khalil Mack on their defense. They have some good players. Eric Weddle's a great player. Sizzle, over the hill, still a good player. They got some good players on it. Jimmy Smith's a good defensive back. They got good players over there. They ain't got no Khalil Mack over there in Baltimore. That one guy is a difference maker, unlike anybody that the Ravens have. But on top of that, sacks, getting to the quarterback, is something that the Bears are doing better than the Ravens by a pretty significant margin, actually. The Bears finished the year third in the league in sacks with 50 on the season. The Ravens were tied for 11th with 43. And then to that same point, the third thing would be the takeaways. Fumbles and interceptions have... Chicago is running away with that. They had 36 on the season takeaways by a comfortable margin. That's the most in the NFL. Second was the Browns with 31, actually. The Ravens were way down at tied for 22nd with 17 takeaways. So between the sacks, the takeaways, and the Khalil Mack factor, yeah, the Bears have the better defense. They do. And they're also top two and three in points allowed and yards allowed. So it's not like they're, you know, the Ravens have a significant advantage over them. So I say that to say, yeah, I feel comfortable picking against the Ravens in round one while also picking the Bears to go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC because of defense. And so this Bears defense is just so lights out, man. I mean, we saw what they did to the Rams. I mean, we've seen what they've been doing all year. They've just been shutting teams the F down and not giving a damn. Like they are for real. I would not want to see them at all. And when you look at what the Bears have done this year, I mean, they finished 12-4 in a pretty, well, maybe a disappointing division, but an okay division. But here's the thing. They lost to Green Bay week one by 1 point, and that was on a kind of a fluky late play by the Packers where Randall Cobb got free and ran for a long touchdown. And the Packers had this huge comeback. But the Bears dominated that game against Green Bay in week one, but kind of lost it late. There was that game. They lost to the Dolphins in overtime down in Miami. It was still maybe late September. It's still probably really hot down there. Late September in Miami, I'm going to guess it was like 95 degrees with 1,000,000,000% humidity. Then you had the following week, they lost to the Patriots at home, but there's no shame in losing to the Patriots, right? And they actually lost. I was at that game. They actually lost that game because the Patriots scored two special teams touchdowns in that game. That was the difference. And then the only other game that the Bears lost was a game against the Giants. It was kind of a bit of a trap game because they had the Rams in primetime the following week, but they lost to the Giants in overtime by a field goal. So we got two overtime losses by a field goal. A fluky comeback loss to the Packers, or arch rival, and a loss to the Patriots. And that's it for the whole season. Like, I mean, this team is for real, man. And like I said, they've been roughing teams up all year. Now, they haven't had the most difficult schedule either, but they did beat up on Seattle. They did whoop up on the Packers the second time they played them. Even though they only won the game by 9 points, they killed the Rams in that game. They've killed the Vikings in primetime. Like, I believe in this Bears team. I believe in their defense, really. I mean, and I'm going to get to Mr. Trubisky in a minute, but I believe in the Bears defense as much as I believe in anything or any unit in these playoffs outside of Tom Brady. Like, in terms of things Justin believes in, Tom Brady is one. Nobody will ever surpass one. He will always be one until the day he hangs up his cleats. And then after that is the Bears defense. And that's why I think the Patriots and the Bears are going to go back. They're going to face each other in the Super Bowl. I think the Patriots are going to go back because when I look at the road to the Super Bowl in the AFC, well, I think the Patriots are going to go back and I think they're going to end up playing Chicago. Now, Chicago, again, They can't fall asleep at the wheel here because the Eagles are a defending champion and they snuck into the playoffs. They reminded me of like the Houston Rockets of 95 when they made the trade for Clyde Drexler. They swapped Otis Thorpe for Clyde Drexler. They snuck in as like a sixth seed. Nobody took them seriously and then they won the Super Bowl or they won the NBA championship. And so the Eagles have the opportunity to win the Super Bowl in the same kind of fashion where they go out, they get a guy like Michael Bennett. They don't impress during the season. They sneak in as a sixth seed. But then they try to repeat as champions because they got that heart. But I think it's kind of fool's gold with the Eagles. I think it's fool's gold. You know what I'm saying? For one, Nick Foles is banged up. He's going to play on Sunday, but he's been banged up for a minute. He got banged up in the Washington game, but he was banged up, I think, going into that Washington game. So that's one thing. As a matter of fact, the Bears hit so hard, I would not be shocked if Nick Foles didn't finish the game on Sunday. But on top of that, the Eagles, they kind of lucked into even making the playoffs, right? I mean, if we're being honest about it. And, you know, they won. They got hot towards the end of the year. They won five of their last six games, the Eagles did. But three of those wins were against the Giants and Redskins. So those are teams that were out of it. The Giants have been out of it since week one. The Redskins have been out of it since mid-season when Alex Smith broke his leg on TV in three places, right? But since then, the Redskins have been out of it. And they as a matter of fact, as I go back and look at that first Redskins Eagles game, that was against Mark Sanchez that they beat. Yeah, that Mark Sanchez started that game for the Redskins, and the Eagles beat him on Monday Night Football, and then they shut out the Redskins and Josh Johnson 24-0 to end the season. Now, mixed in there, you had two good wins, one against the Rams in L.A., one against the Texans a couple of weeks ago. So those were good wins. Although, those were good wins. But the fact that half of their wins down the stretch, or more than half of them, came against the Giants and Redskins makes me question whether or not this is the real deal. And then when you think back to what the Eagles did last year, they hosted a divisional round matchup that was against the Atlanta Falcons. So the Falcons, who are coming off a Super Bowl hangover loss, the worst loss ever. They did win the previous week in LA, but the Falcons were not, they're an indoor team. They're going outside into a cold environment like Philadelphia. It wasn't shocking that they lost that game. I called that game correctly last year. Then the Eagles played the Vikings in the NFC Championship game at home, but that was a Vikings team that was coming off the most emotional win ever. That was the emotional win of all emotional wins, right? And so they win that game, and then they go to the Super Bowl and they play the Patriots, who had like the worst defense we've ever seen in a Super Bowl, pretty much. So, you know, even though they won and they deserved it and they earned it, like, I personally was not overly impressed by what the Eagles did last year. Even though they did kind of have this nobody believed in us thing going, which was true, but now people believe in them. A lot of people think they're going to beat Chicago because nobody wants to trust Mitch Trubisky, which is something I can't understand because Mitch Trubisky has been solid this year. And the Bears offense was ninth in the league in points per game. And with two more touchdowns would have been up to fourth in the NFL in points per game. And they're a fourth in the NFL in point differential. So like the data would suggest that the Bears are real deal Holyfield, whereas the Eagles seem a little fugazi, you know what I'm saying? And so people are just, I think, a little overly concerned about Mitch Trubisky. I get why people are concerned about him, and he doesn't have any experience in the playoffs, and he does tend to throw an occasional pass into the fourth row. I get that. But again, we wrote a piece on him talking up about how his maturation was right on schedule. Immediately after that, he throws for 354 and six touchdowns against Tampa, right? In that game they lost to Miami, he threw for 316 and three scores. He had a game against Detroit where he threw, he was out that game, but he did have a game against Detroit where he threw for 355 and three scores. He had a game against the Packers on December 16th, 235, two scores, no picks, a passer rating of 120. Like, why is it that when Mitchell Trubisky puts up these numbers, two touchdowns, no picks, all in wins, nobody says anything about it and everybody still questions him. But when Baker Mayfield does it, everybody wets themselves with excitement. I don't understand that. But Trubisky has proven that he can be serviceable at quarterback. And I'll say this again, y'all. We have to open up and expand our thinking when it comes to quarterbacks that are capable of winning a Super Bowl, right? We saw Peyton Manning not even be able to throw a Nerf ball 10 yards, win a Super Bowl just 2 years ago, right? How did he do it? We saw Trent Dilfer, who was a career bum, win a Super Bowl. How did he do it? We saw Brad Johnson, who was a journeyman, win a Super Bowl. How did he do it? We saw Eli Manning, probably the most overrated quarterback in NFL history, win two Super Bowls. How did he do it? How did all these guys do it? They did it with defense. All these dudes did it with defense. And none of those dudes in that year were better than Mitch Trubisky has been this year. So why can't Mitch Trubisky go to a Super Bowl? Why? Because he throws an occasional pass into the fourth row? Okay, well, as long as he's not throwing it to the other team, they're going to be fine, okay? Mitch Trubisky has been fine all year long. He's been better than what most have expected. He just doesn't get the credit for it. And to take it a step further, quarterbacks are often judged by passer rating, right? But in more recent years, they've started to be judged in a lot of circles by the quarterback rating or QBR statistic that ESPN came up with. The two league leaders in QBR, first in the league is Patrick Mahomes. He's kind of has the inside track on the MVP award. Second would be Drew Brees. He's kind of the inside track on the runner-up for the MVP award probably right now. They're both at 81.6 and 80.8 respectively. Third in the NFL in QBR, you ask? Mitchell Trubisky. That's right. Mitch Trubisky finished third in the league, y'all, in the whole league in QBR. He was at 72.8. That's ahead of Ben Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Matt Ryan, Jared Goff, Russell Wilson, Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, anybody else you can think of. Trubisky topped all of them in quarterback rating this year, including Jesus in cleats, a.k.a. Baker Mayfield, who, in case you were wondering, finished 23rd at 53.9. And that's on a 0 to 100 scale, y'all. So, I mean, again, now passer rating, he was much lower, but that's because QBR takes into account stats like rushing and things like that. Like, quarterback rushing yards really matter when it comes to QBR, and Mitch Trubisky is adept at running the football when he needs to. So, again, Trubisky hasn't been nearly as bad as people make him out to be, and nobody would have ever expected that he'd be third in the whole league in QBR, but that's where he is right now. But we do this every year, y'all. We do this every single year. Where, you know, we see a team with a great defense, we don't give them any credit, and then we don't pick them to do anything because they're not flashy. And then we see these teams score a bunch of points in September, in October, and we hitch our wagon to those teams and say they're going to go to the Super Bowl. And then every year, without fail, pretty much it's a defensive-minded team that breaks through and makes a deep run and wins the Super Bowl and knocks out that team that was supposedly, quote-unquote, unstoppable. We see it every single year. Why do we keep making the same mistake? Here's your New Year's resolution. Don't make that mistake again. Ride with the Chicago Bears like I am, because the Bears defense is for real. So, yeah, no, I didn't pick four road teams to win. Give me the Colts. Give me the Seahawks. Give me the Chargers. Give me the Bears covering the six. By the way, only a handful of teams have ever won three straight road playoff games to make a Super Bowl. That'd be the 85 Pats, the 05 Steelers, the 07 Giants, and the 2010 Packers. The last three teams I mentioned all won it. So, I mean, if you're thinking about teams like Seattle, Indy, the Chargers, and the Eagles to make a Super Bowl run, it ain't likely to happen, bruh. Just here to tell you the truth. The stats would say that it's a long shot. Real quick, as far as the AFC is concerned, I still like Los Angeles, the Chargers as a team. But when I look at the landscape, I see the Patriots getting back, man. And if, first of all, if Houston wins, and I'm wrong about that game, then Houston, I believe, would travel to New England. And New England owns them, so that's not good for them. So that means New England would have a decent chance of getting back to the AFC title game. The only team that New England would have to play on the road, hypothetically, in the AFC title game would be Kansas City. And we see Kansas City every year in the playoffs freeze up, fold up. We know what Andy Reid's history is in the playoffs with clock management. Weird stuff always happens with Andy Reid teams, always happens with Kansas City teams. And I don't trust a team like the Chiefs who can't stop a nosebleed. No, I don't think so. Meanwhile, we have a New England team whose defense has been getting better progressively throughout the season and who's as battle-tested of any team in any sport ever. I mean, I just trust those guys more. And I'm thinking that maybe Gronk has a little bit left in the tank that they've been holding on to, and they don't want to use him up during the regular season, but they're gonna open him up on the playoffs, and we're gonna see a little bit more Gronkowski in the passing game. We're gonna see a little more Brady in the passing game. Even though they're a largely running team, I think New England's much better when James White is catching passes. He was their leading receiver this year, and they tended to win games when he was catching passes. When he went quiet, that's when they tended to lose. But be that as it may, the Patriots, if the Colts win, then the Colts would travel to Kansas City, which means that New England would get the winner of the Ravens and Chargers game. that would be a tough game, I think, either way for the Patriots, but I think they could still win either of those games. And ultimately, I would not be shocked if Kansas City lost their first playoff game and New England was hosting the AFC Championship game again. So there you go. So yeah, man, that'll wrap it up. Go ahead and check out hiphopsportsreport.com. I do have a piece on there kind of summing up the year in hip-hop. Basically, the year in hip-hop in 2018 was all about comebacks, but yet at the same time, it was underwhelming. And I explained why out on the website. Thanks to y'all for tuning in. I will be tuning into these games on Saturday and Sunday. Do not bother me. Don't call me. Don't text me. Don't do nothing. I'm sitting in front of the TV. I'm watching these games. And hopefully my two kids will let me do it. I got my fingers crossed. We out of here. Peace.